Hi, I'm Chrissy. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Bob for speaking. He did a great job. I also want to thank Boston Brian for giving the secretary's report. He did a really great job. It was really funny. And I especially want to thank Lindsay for asking me to speak tonight. I was actually telling somebody last week just how important this group is to me. I was telling Jason. I just saw you there, so I thought I'd say hi. and this group is so important to me because when I first got sober, probably I came down here 30 days sober, and I had no idea that there was a group this big of young people just like me who didn't drink. I really just had no idea. I met my sponsor down here. My best friends are down here. My boyfriend is down here. My sponsee is here. And every time I come here, I really do, like, you know, I feel so comfortable and I can be myself and I can be funny and I know, you know, most people. And it's just so important to me. So I'm very happy to be able to speak tonight. Like I said, I do have a sponsor, and I've been through the steps, and I'm going through a kind of weird time with my sobriety date right now. We had a little breakup, but I'm going to talk about it later because it comes in at the end of the story, so keep you in suspense. So I was born in New Jersey, and my parents are just, like, the most amazing, wonderful people in the world. And, you know, they both came from, they both had, like, really difficult childhoods. Like, my dad lost his mom when he was 14 and his dad when he was 19, which I just, like, can't even imagine. I'm 26 years old and I can't imagine my life without my parents. And my mom, her dad was and still is an alcoholic, and he was really abusive, and he used to beat the shit out of, like, my mom and her sisters and my grandma. And my parents never really drank because they saw, like, what a monster he was when he got drunk, so that just never appealed to them. Funnily enough, there are 7 grandchildren, and my grandpa used to always say that out of all of the granddaughters, I was his favorite because I had blue eyes, and I was the only one that had blue eyes. I'm the only one that became the alcoholic, so they have more than one thing in common. But anyway, so my parents they came from, like, the slums of Jersey City, and they worked really hard, and, you know, now they're, like, upper middle class people, so I really admire them and look up to them. So when I was 5, we moved from New Jersey to Delaware, and we moved in the middle of the year, which, like, was really awkward. And I just remember sitting in kindergarten and, like, being 6 years old and feeling like I didn't fit in and I had no friends and nobody liked me. And, like, I don't know why anybody would feel that way, you know, at 6 years old, but I did. But, you know, I adjusted, and I have an older sister. She's 2 years older than me, and I was just, like, constantly always compared to her, and I never felt like I could be as good as my sister was. Like, she was just naturally intelligent. Like, she never had to work hard, never had to study, and did, like, amazing. And I was the one that had to work, like, really, really, really hard in school to get good grades. She was also so much prettier than me, and I was really awkward looking. Like, I was not cute. I was just, like, a really, like, awkward kid. But, you know, I was funny and I was happy. I felt kind of weird in grade school in Delaware because my mom was very overprotective of us. And she still kind of is, but, you know, I love her. And I didn't find out until later. It's because she was, like, raped at, like, some guy, like, held a knife up to her throat when she was in college and, like, raped her. Like, she could have died. So she was always very overprotective of us. So we were never allowed to do, like, cheerleading or brownies. Like, I was probably the only kid, the only girl in school, like, that wasn't, like, a Girl Scout. She pushed us really hard and in school, and you know, like, we would get rewarded when we got good grades on our report cards. Like, if we got all A's, we would get to go to Toys R Us and, like, spend $20 on a toy. It was really fun. So, yeah, it was just, like, a value that was instilled in me. We went and saw the Pope at Giant Stadium in New Jersey. Like, he did, like, this big mass when I was in fourth grade. And my mom was like, you can pray for one thing, and the one thing you pray for will come true. And I, like, it was so important to me. I prayed for straight A's, you know. And I actually got them. Like, it was really weird. But got them, like, all throughout my life. But I also worked hard. So, anyway. So I finally get comfortable in Delaware, and I feel like I have a good group of friends, and I've gone through kindergarten through seventh grade with them, and we move again to San Diego, and I'd probably be like the only person in the world that did not want to move from Delaware to San Diego, but it was where, like, all my friends were and where I was comfortable, and we moved again in the middle of the year, so I felt, like, really awkward, and the East Coast is different than the West Coast, and, you know, I just felt, like, really weird. But I got over it, and went to high school at this all-girls private Catholic, like, hellhole prison, like, awful. I mean, if you know, like, teenage girls, you put them, like, all in one room together, like, it's just not good. And, you know, we all wore uniforms, and it was right when Britney Spears came out with that stupid Baby One More Time song. So, like, everywhere we went in our uniforms, people would, like, sing it to us, and it was so obnoxious. But, like, I had a good first couple of years in high school, and it's just so complicated to say, but, like, you know, we're at an all-girls school. We're not getting attention from guys, obviously. It's mostly female teachers, and there were maybe, like, four or five male teachers there. And this one male teacher, like, he just gave me a lot of attention, and, you know, I'd never had that before. I was really, like, insecure, and I was just kind of in over my head with that. I was 16, like, I didn't know what I was doing, and basically, like, he was, like, twice my age and married and, like, in a position of power, and I ended up, like, I thought I loved this guy, you know, like, I never thought, like, is he going to leave his wife for me? Like, I never thought, I don't think you think those things when you're 16 and, like, your teacher is, like, coming on to you and whatever. So this kind of went on for, like, my whole junior year, and my parents ended up finding out about it, and, you know, I thought this guy, like, loved me. But the first thing he said to me when I told him that they found out was, how could you do this to me? Like, and I kind of carried that with me for, like, my entire life until I got sober, was that I had ruined this man's life. I should have known better. Like, how could I have done that? And, you know, people in my school found out and said, like, really awful things about me. And, like, I was a slut and, you know, just the worst person in the world. And I believed it. And I really hated myself for that. I really did. And I say this for, like, two reasons, not to make it, like, a talk about sexual abuse or anything, but number one, like, it does happen, and it's not okay, and whatever, I'm just putting that out there. If it's happened to you, like, it's not okay. And number two, like, it definitely brought me here a lot faster, because I never drank, I never did anything in high school. You know, I was totally, like, anti all of that stuff, and when that happened, I just couldn't stand myself, and I didn't want to be that person anymore. And everybody knew who Kristen Sismalik was, and that is my name. A lot of people don't know that. My last name is not Mary, but, like, people would find me, like, online, like, Kristen Sismalik, whatever. So I started going by Chrissy when I got to college, and I picked UC Santa Barbara because it was on the beach and it was a party school, and I wanted to be a party girl. And right off the bat, like, my drinking was just like out of control, and I kind of blamed it on my parents for never letting us drink in high school. Like, I just didn't know how to drink. Like, I would take like 10 shots a night. Like, I blacked out right from the beginning. Like, just an emotional, angry, crazy disaster when I drank. Like, nothing good ever came of it. But I never thought anything was wrong with it, because I thought it kind of happened to everybody. Like, I just thought that's what happens when people drink. Like, they just act like complete fools. I don't know. But and I ended up transferring to Syracuse because I was in love, and obviously it didn't work out. But where's my boyfriend? I can't see him. There he is. Okay. Didn't work out for the better. But so I went to Syracuse, and again, like, obviously I'm crazy because I go from school on the beach to like school in the tundra. You know, like, it snows like from, you know, September till May up there. But I went there, and, you know, and then I came down here, and just, like, some highlights from my drinking, you know, like, I have, been on an airplane and woken up in a hospital. I've slammed my head into a brick wall, like, trying to kill myself. I've been, like, strangled before. You know, I've smashed my car windshield and not even remembered doing it. You know, if somebody wasn't in the car with me telling me, like, Chrissy, you just broke your windshield, like, I would have no idea. And I was just, like, it was just out of control, and I just really hated myself, and it became, like, this cycle of just, like, hating being sober, hating myself for what I did the night before, so needing to go out and get fucked up and do it again, and just, like, this continual cycle of just hating myself. And I just really hated myself. Like, I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that feeling. It's just, like, the worst feeling in the world, you know, to not want to live. So the last year of my drinking down in Tampa, I didn't really go out and drink that much. Like, I mainly smoked because I still had to be fucked up, but I didn't like what happened when I drank. But, you know, everything kind of shit hit the fan, so to say, when I got my DUI. I went hard, you know, that's how we do it. I fell asleep at a traffic light with my foot on the brake of my car, and of course I was so wasted, I didn't wake up when they were like knocking on the window, and they smashed the window, and I still didn't wake up, and this paramedic had to, like, you know, make me conscious, and I was like, how could you fucking break my window, like, what the hell, you know? And like, I honestly can't even explain how big of a bitch I was to the DUI officer that arrested me. I'm like, he's telling me to do stuff, and I'm calling him sir, but I have, like, a huge attitude about it. And I was like, I hope your granddaughter gets a DUI. And, you know, he takes me down to, like, booking, and he's asking me about my tattoos, I guess because they just want to, like, you know, identifiers. And I'm like, why are you judging me for my tattoos, you know, and just, like, being, like, insane. My cell phone died. I didn't know anybody's phone numbers. Like, I had to walk to the bail bonds place. I had to get my car fixed. Like, oh, and the kicker is that this guy, like, asked me 3 times if I was going to, like, blow into the breathalyzer, and I was like, no, because I didn't want to do anything that he told me to do. But eventually I said I would, and, like, I was convinced I was sober. I was convinced, like, you know, I had been wronged, and I would blow below a .08, and I blew a .237, and, you know, I'm so glad that I did, because, like, that's how out of control my drinking was, that I couldn't even, you know, like, tell how messed up I was. And, like, a month after, I'm sure, like, some of you remember, there was this dentist on Halloween, and he was driving home drunk, like, by Jackson's, and he, like, hit and killed these 2 people leaving work, and that just, like, really impacted me, because I just thought about how lucky I was, you know, that I didn't kill anybody, or I didn't kill myself, like, falling asleep while my car is still on, and, you know, how did I keep my foot on the brake, you know, like, this man had everything, you know, and he just lost it all in one night, you know. And I just, like, I kind of started realizing, you know, like something's not right. And, you know, I realized I was lucky. You know, and I went to like DUI school and like everybody's like, well, you can still drink. You just can't drink and drive. And I'm like, well, I just don't really like think I can drink. I don't know. I went to court. This was like December 9th, 2010. I went to court, and only in the state of Florida can you be caught like red-handed, like the .237, asleep, like everything. And my DUI got like reduced to a reckless driving because if the officer that had originally arrested me had shown up to court, like I would have gotten charged with it. And he was the only police officer that didn't show up to court that day. So it was just very fortunate because I just wouldn't have been able to handle it. You know, I felt like such a failure that I had done this, you know, so I was so grateful for that. But after court, my lawyer was like, Kristen, I'm going to tell you something, like, you're an alcoholic. And I'm like, okay, like, you're crazy, you know, like, thanks for getting me off of this. Like, I really appreciate it, but like, I'm not an alcoholic. Like, that's crazy. But I just kept thinking more and more about it. And I, you know, I decided I should probably like give this a shot. And the last time I drank was on December 5th, 2010. And what I remember about that is that I just kept going back for more. Like, that is the story of my drinking. Like, I didn't just like drink and enjoy it. Like, I just had to like keep going back for more. Like, it was just never enough. So anyway, I have not had a drink since then, but I guess when I got sober, I didn't realize, like, you can't take your dad's Percocets, you, like, really shouldn't take Xanax, you know, you shouldn't take Klonopin, you shouldn't take Ambien, like, all these prescription pills. Like, obviously, I knew you shouldn't smoke pot, so I didn't do that, but I did steal my dad's Percocets on Christmas, so I changed my sobriety date. Like, after a couple months, I realized, like, that wasn't right. But anyway, so I'm doing this sober thing. I met my sponsor just, like, by sheer luck. I had asked a couple ladies up in Tampa Palms to sponsor me, and they said no. Like, they had too many girls, and they just couldn't sponsor me. And I even asked a man, and he was like, no, we don't really do that here. It was, like, really awkward, but he said no, obviously. So I pick up my 30-day chip down here the first time I came here, and Annie was standing next to me at the end, like, of the meeting doing the Our Father, and, like, she's like, oh, you got your 30-day chip today. Like, how long, you know, whatever, do you have a sponsor? I was like, no. Like, will you be my sponsor? I just asked her to be my sponsor without knowing, like, anything about her. And it couldn't have worked out, like, any better. We have so much in common, and I can call her whenever I'm feeling crazy, which lately has been, like, more frequent than a couple times. Like, you know, a couple months ago, I go up and down, you know. Nothing's perfect, but that's just totally God, you know, like it just could not have worked out any better. So I'm really grateful that those people said no to me, because if they hadn't, then she wouldn't be my sponsor. I did what we're not supposed to do. I got into a relationship, you know, way before I should have, like 3 months sober. And I understand now why you're not supposed to do it, because I just wasn't in the place where I was putting myself first, you know, like I wouldn't go to meetings, I wouldn't hang out with my friends, I wasn't building up this network of support that I, you know, value so much today, and obviously that did not work out, and I just could not cope with it. Like, I really couldn't. This guy was like my life, you know. I lost a lot of weight, and I just, like, I could not live without this guy, you know, like, I just couldn't. And I went to my doctor, and I asked her for a prescription for Xanax, because I do have anxiety, and at the time, I wasn't abusing it. I was taking it as prescribed, and I didn't think anything about it, and that was in, like, July or August of last year. But, you know, something got brought up and I was thinking about it and I realized, like, it just wasn't right. You know, like, people have differing opinions. Like Bob said, like, he's totally cool with it. Bob, I wish you were my sponsor, but you're not. And, like, I do get differing opinions about it, you know, but at the end of the day, what my sponsor said to me was that, she said, it's all, like, up to you, to thine own self be true, and it just was eating me alive. Like, I just felt like a liar. You know, I didn't do it on purpose, and I was kind of pissed because I could have been drinking the whole time. Like, really. No, I'm serious, and I felt, like, very... Stan, stop laughing at me. But I was mad, and I was angry that people had more time than me, but I think I just needed that, like, humility. I needed to be honest with myself, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, like, how much time I technically have. Like, I haven't even picked a date right now, and whatever, I'll pick one at some other point, but, like, what matters is that I'm doing the right thing, and I'm being honest, and, like, my perfect example is my boyfriend, who's almost 7 years sober, and he still does things, and I'm like, oh my God, like, what were you like 7 years ago? Like, you're still doing this crazy stuff. Like, but we're all not perfect, you know, like... No, he's the best, and this is why we have such a good relationship, because we laugh at each other, and he's not going to yell at me when I get home tonight. He loves it, so. But yeah, so that's my story with changing my date, and I'm sticking to it. It took a lot to say that, but, you know, if it helps somebody else, then it's fine, and I'm fine with it. You know, it kind of freed me, so. I had my spiritual awakening, kind of like steps 1, 2, and 3 before I actually got sober. I got my hardship license, and you can drive to, like, church and school and, you know, doctor's appointments. So I started going to church, like, back in, like, November of 2010, because I could drive there and not be, like, looking in my mirror and, you know, like, are there cops here? Do I have a reason for going where I'm going? So I decided to go to confession because I'm Catholic, and at this point, like, for the past 8 years since that stuff happened in high school until, you know, I got my DUI, I just had no relationship with God, and I hated him, and I felt like he really fucked me over by letting what happened in high school happen to me. Like, I really, like, felt abandoned, and I didn't care, you know, but I went to confession, and I talked to this priest for, like, 5 minutes, and he was like, Chrissy, God forgives you, you know, like, but you have to forgive yourself. And that was the moment that I was able to let go of everything that I had been holding on to from my past. Like, everything that happened in high school, everything that happened with my friends, like, because at the end of the day, the only person it was hurting was me, you know, like, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what my teacher's doing. I'm sure he's fine. Like, I'm the one that's, like, dying, you know, because of it. And it just was, like, an incredible moment. And I was able to, like, really just let go of it. I loved doing the fourth step because I realized my part in things. It wasn't just things that happened to me. It was things that I, you know, somehow contributed to. And I could, you know, recognize that. I like doing my fear inventory. One of my fears happened actually a year ago today. You know, I have two dogs and I love them so much. And, like, anybody that has a dog knows, like, they're your babies. And I draw my dogs off to get their teeth cleaned. And I was like, okay, see you later. Like, call me when they wake up. And one of them got killed. And, that was one of my biggest fears, was losing my dogs, you know, and that day, like, I went to class that day, I went to a meeting that day, I hung out with my sponsor that day, and I gracefully went through that, you know, and it's funny that it was a year ago today, but I just feel like I'm able to get through things now that I wouldn't have been able to get through before. I did my Prince list, and I got Lloyd. That's actually a funny story, too, because After that failed relationship, I was like, maybe God just wants me to become a nun. And I'm not joking. I was being like very serious about it. And so I was thinking about it and feeling bad, like, oh my God, God wants me to become a nun. Like, this is why all these relationships are not working out. And I like went up to the priest after mass and I was like, oh, I just want to talk to you about maybe going on like a retreat for like nuns. And he was so excited. And then like a week after, like Lloyd and I started dating. So I think like, luckily, you know, that wasn't God's plan for me, but I was willing, you know. I didn't have a problem with my fifth step because, as you can see, I'm very honest and whatever. It was what it was. It was fine. It wasn't like this, oh my gosh, this huge weight off my shoulders. It was like, yeah, well, everybody knows that anyway. So, let's see. I love the immense, and I have something I want to read to you. I recently made immense to the police officer that arrested me. And this is like my favorite amends ever. And I'm going to read to you the email that he wrote back to me. I looked him up, and of course, he's like the head of the DUI initiative. I'm like, oh my God. And I basically said, thank you for saving my life, because that was the moment that like my whole life changed, you know. And he said, hi, Kristen. I appreciate your kind words. It is a rare opportunity to receive such a nice letter. While your incident occurred many months ago, or 250 DUI arrests ago for me, I do remember you. I wasn't exaggerating, like I was out of control. It says, every once in a while, a unique opportunity presents itself. Obviously, yours is one of those. I know that you've had your fill of lectures, so let me just say congratulations. I am proud of you. I know that it took courage to accomplish what you have done. You have also expressed great humility by contacting me. If you have an interest in helping others, your story is special and provides an opportunity to make an impact on the lives of other people. And it just says, like, please feel free to contact me. But it meant so much to me, you know, and most people are very receptive to amends, and some people aren't. And some people I apologize to, and, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, are you going to apologize for what you did to me? And I don't get it. And it's not about that. It's not about them. Fine, like, you don't think you did anything wrong, okay? Like, it's about me and clearing up, like, my side of the street, you know? So I definitely still do 10 steps. It's funny when I do them, I'm like, okay, I'll do this. I only have like 3 things to write on it. And then I do it and I've got like a list of like 10 plus things on my inventory. But, you know, it's good to just, you know, write things down and be accountable for them. You know, and I think one of the best things is being able to sponsor people, and my little sponsee just picked up her 2-month chip today, and that means that all the boys in here better stay away from her. I will beat you down if you do to her what was done to me. No, I'm kidding. But seriously. But no, it's just been amazing to be able to use my experience and just be honest with somebody and watch her, you know. Becky's been sober for 2 months and she's grown so much already. And it's just great to be able to be honest with her and be like a positive influence in her life, you know, because I never really think I was a positive influence in anybody's life, you know, and like, I was scared when I first started sponsoring people. Like, I felt all this pressure, like, to be perfect. And my sponsor said to me, you know, nothing you say or do is going to keep anybody sober. You know, all you can do is just share your experience. And it's what I do, you know, and it's who I am. I have such an amazing life today, and it's by no means perfect, and it, you know, it has good moments and it has bad moments, but I'm able to get through the bad moments because I have all of these tools, you know, like I'm able to cope with life and just get through things, and I never really think about drinking. I just got into nursing school, and I finished my first week of nursing school today, and I'm terrified of blood, and I hate vomit, and I'm so scared, but, like, I'm going to be able to do anything, you know? Like, I'm not letting my fears hold me back. I used to always say, I wish I could be a nurse, but I really don't like blood, and now I'm doing it, and yeah, it's going to be scary at first, but I'm going to be able to do it. And, you know, my sponsor is doing the same thing. And just another thing that we have in common, you know, she helps me so much. I have this amazing relationship with my parents. They live about an hour away, and I go and I see them as often as I can. And I'm just so grateful for everything that they've done to me. They've stood by my side from everything, from the things that happened in high school to my DUI arrest, even when I didn't deserve it. Like, they stood by me and loved me. And, you know, every day I make my living amends to them. I have really good friends. And I'm able to be myself, like, tonight. Like, I'm, like, funny and silly and, you know, smart but ditzy. Like, I don't care, you know, like, I am. I've never, you know, the past 8 years before I got sober, I wasn't like that, you know. I was, like, walking on eggshells, and I cared so much what everybody thought about me, you know. And, yeah, I do care a little bit about what you think about me, but, like, it's like what Dr. Seuss says, how be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter and those that matter don't mind. You know, like, I know the people that know me will love me. And if you think bad things about me, like, sorry, you know, for, like, you don't matter anyway. You know, like, I mean, I try to think that anyway, but and I have a really good relationship and really good friends, and I'm able to be a good friend. And, you know, I had a very long day today, and I was not feeling well, and I had 6.5 hours of class, and I came, you know, right from USF down here, because we keep our commitments. It makes people trust us. It shows that, you know, we can be relied upon, and it's what we do. And I'm just here to carry the message and pass it forward and just be an example of what Alcoholics Anonymous can do for people. So thank you very much.